Okay, Robert E., go ahead. The floor is yours.
And away we go. Good morning, everyone. Good day, everyone. Thank you, Louisa, for asking me to share a little bit of my story. I'm Robert, and I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober for 15 years as of this past August. I'll try not to ramble. I'll start at kind of the beginning. I think my childhood kind of plays into this through line of who I am discovering that I am at this age. I was raised about 180 miles south of here, working class family, three siblings. I'm a twin. I think my parents probably could have afforded two children, but they ended up having four, and they did the best they could. My father worked at a factory and sometimes worked two jobs so that my mother could stay at home and raise us. My mother was definitely the head of the household. They were both great parents. They had their flaws, but they lived for their children, and I'm eternally grateful for that. They got us into music or sports. I was always perfectly content to sit in front of the television and watch movies or television or build my model cars or my model airplanes. And she'd kick me out and have me, so I could play with the neighborhood children. And then I started reading, and that was another big thing. I was introduced to ice hockey when I was 8 years old, and that became a very important aspect of my youth when I was eight. And by the time I was 13, I got a scholarship to a summer camp at Michigan State University, which is one of the preeminent programs in the United States for ice hockey. At least it was at the time. I don't know if it still is, but they use it as a recruitment and scouting tool to see what young talents out there. But then 15 came along, and that summer of my 1975, when I was 15, I was asked to be a junior counselor at a summer camp, and I was the youngest one there. And that's where I was introduced to cigarettes, to pot, to alcohol, and to drugs. And I never looked back. That changed my life, the trajectory of my life. I probably would have, I would have come across it at some point, but that's when I was introduced to it, and I had the summer to embrace it all. Luckily, drugs never really played a part in my life. I think it scared drugs scared me. After that summer, it got to the point, I played varsity hockey, and I was always careful. I never got drunk before practice or before a hockey game, but other than that, I got high before school, at lunchtime, and after school. And that was the prevalent, I was suspended for 3 days. It's the first time I made my mother cry. I was suspended because the dean, they called them deans, principal or whatever, caught three of us. We would get hot. We had hockey practice at lunch. We would get high in this one of their vans, and then we would go up and spend the rest of the day high. Well, he caught on to this thing we were doing, and we came into the school one day, and he was there waiting for us. And I'm sure we just reeked of pot. And So they called my parents in and suspended us. I almost hockey was the most important thing to me when growing up. Well into my late 20s. But I was threatened to get kicked off the varsity team and all that. But I barely graduated from high school. I had to get out of that environment I was in. There was no way I was going to stick around where I grew up was, it was like 30,000 people. But then a few miles away was Peoria, Illinois, which is like, I don't know, 180,000 or so. And it's the international home of Caterpillar Tractor Company. And that's where my father worked. And, you either went to college, or you started working in the factory, or you helped on the farm. That was your, or you went, to college. But I chose the military. I went into the Air Force. I could drink all I wanted as long as I showed up. In the morning, I had an office job basically. I took advantage of that. I was the first time at 19 years old, it was the first time I was asked if I was an alcoholic by a doctor. I was an asshole. I had anger issues, which is what I think ice hockey helped me a lot, because I could get my anger out. I fought a lot in ice hockey. That's was part of the game. I had a hair trick. I flew into rages very easily when I was young. My brother, older brother, used to tease me just to get me into those rages. And then in the Air Force, I was demoted. A stripe was taken away, and my time in grade, because of my attitudes. And that was a huge lesson, that I have to get along with other people. It was a less, it was a lesson I learned. I straightened up my act, at least on the outside. I knew what I needed to do to get along and get through those 4 years in the Air Force. Always had my shoes polished, always had those razor sharp seams and all of that stuff. And I ended up getting my, about a year and a half later, I was called into the commander's office, and he gave me my stripe back and my time and grade back, because of the turnaround he had saw in me. But it was all a facade. I just knew what I had to do, so I did it. And I had them so convinced that, they thought for sure I was going to re-enlist. But that would have been a good environment for me, had I not started wrestling with my sexual orientation by then. I knew I couldn't stay in the military, being, and trying to pursue an honest life as a gay man. So I got out, I went to college. I was a binge drinker for the most part. I could moderate it because I was smoking pot. I think in retrospect, I look at it that way, because once I was in my early 30s, I was in a long-term relationship, and we lived together, and I was in my mid-30s, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna quit smoking pot. I'm in my 30s. It's just it And then, of course, it wasn't legal, and so that's when my drinking took off, though, once when I quit smoking pot. So that's why I think maybe that was a moderating it had a moderating effect, because once I quit pot, I just the drinking just went out of control. I ended up breaking up with my partner of 8 years. That's when things just started to spiral downhill. I was working in commercial photography by then, steadily had a good career path. But it, alcohol just became the most important thing for the most part. And I got a job. By then I was, and then like fast forward, I was in my 40s, and I still didn't really have a career to speak of. I was going back and forth between New York and Chicago on these jobs, and I was doing that for about 4 years, and spending half my time in New York, half my time in Chicago. And so I decided to And by then, I was living by myself. I was renting a room with a friend who had an apartment. And I remember once I got sober, I did my amends. Did my steps, did my amends, and so my behavior was atrocious with most people during that time. And my circle of friends were just those I drank with. But I primarily drank alone. I would drink socially. I would drink at the bars. If I was with my buddies, I would get drunk with them at bars. But if I had to go to a cocktail party or a dinner party or any social event where being drunk wasn't socially acceptable, I would get drunk first, then go home and get even more drunk. And when I lived with my friend renting a bedroom from him, I remember when we were talking several years later, when I made amends, he was like, I wondered, like, you would just go into your room and just I wouldn't see you for the entire until the next morning, till the next morning. And that's because I was going in there and just getting, I had all my beer. Beer was my drink of choice, and would just get drunk. So by the time I moved out of Chicago, it was a geographic, which for those, I don't know if everyone knows that phrase, but I moved in an attempt to quit drinking, thinking that the environment is what was causing it. So I moved to New York, and other than the professional contacts I had made, I didn't know anyone. And so my drinking just it was just the opposite. It got worse, worse and worse and worse, to the point where after I was there for a few years, I could hardly keep a job. I was just doing these small gigs, and sometimes I wouldn't even show up for them because I couldn't be bothered. Sometimes I couldn't afford bus fare or subway fare. Sometimes I couldn't afford groceries, and I would steal money from my roommate, and I would borrow money from people, anybody I could. My life just became smaller and smaller and smaller. By that time, I had a boyfriend again who somehow tolerated me. I don't really get it now. I mean, like, once I lived in Brooklyn and he lived in Manhattan, and he came out to Brooklyn in a snowstorm to spend the evening. But by the time he got there, I was already like three sheets to the wind. He was buzzing the buzzer, and I completely ignored it. I was like, I'm drunk by now. I'm happy. I don't need you here. I'm just, And he went back home, and then we ended up moving in together. By then, yeah, I was close to homeless before we moved in. I remember we had to do credit checks. He had a good job. He was an architect, and we had to do credit checks, and I did not qualify for even to even get an apartment. So he had to he got one for us. And then once we moved in, that was about the time I started exploring AA. I grew up as a Lutheran. My parents were, we went to church every Sunday, and they weren't the kind of people who talked about God. It was just, they used their religion to, answer whatever questions they needed, to make sense of the world. And that was what they, how they used their beliefs. We had to go to church every Sunday, and I had to go through catechism and become a member of the church. And I have a distinct memory of being, I don't know, somewhere around 8, 9 years old, and in the pews and just not believing any of it. And I don't know where that came from at 8 or 9 years old, but I was like, this just, I'm this I don't believe it. So you know, I lived that, you know, my entire life. And so when I got when I tried getting sober, I chafed at all the God talk because I was very angry. You know, I had this combination of grandiosity and victimhood, you know, that where, you know, I didn't I wanted to do the least amount I had to do to get sober. And one of those was, you know, not talking, not having to hear this God talk. But I luckily being in New York, you can pretty much find a meeting that appeals to you in just about for anything. And I remember I was going to a smattering of gay meetings and there wasn't much God talk in those meetings. And then I just happened to find a couple of meetings that worked for me. But one of the other things that I almost walked out of one meeting. If you wanted to trigger me, start talking about gratitude. I hated that discussion. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to be sober. And you know, then I was just like, what Kool-Aid did you guys drink? Then I tried going to atheist meetings. I found those meetings very angry, just filled with angry people who just talked about God more than even the regular meetings. But everyone just seemed angry. Because they eschewed, it was AA as a meeting, but they eschewed everything having to do with AA. So they didn't discuss, you know, there wasn't any literature, there wasn't any 12 steps. So it was just a bunch of angry drunks, dry drunks, basically. I mean, that was my observation from those meetings. I've since learned that that's not always the case. You know, that's just the meetings I happen to go to. But I found a We Humanist meeting, several of them, agnostics, more agnostic meetings. I would relapse. I was in and out for a few years, just relapsing constantly. I couldn't, you know, I would start walking to a meeting and I would pass a liquor store and I would end up going into the liquor store and just forgetting about the meeting. Then this one humanist meeting, I started going to regularly. I loved the people in there. I started listening, which was the most important thing. I learned to do that. You know, things started to seep into the head. But I was still getting drunk, but counting days. So I was counting days to the people, telling them I was like, you know, 15 days sober, 20 days sober, 25 days sober. I wasn't. I was drinking, but I didn't want them to know that. Because there was that other thing about wanting to be liked and this other stuff. And but then I remember it was like I had counted 45 days that I was sober, and I wasn't. And I was just like, by then I was comfortable enough with this group. I sort of understood them enough that I just admitted it. And you know, I was of course embraced with acceptance and love and understanding, and I was like, wow, because my parents, I love, you know, my parents were great, but I never heard I love you from them. They were dis you know, my mother was a disciplinarian. You know, their idea of they took care of us, they lived for their children, but they weren't, you know, they weren't accessible on an emotional level as parents. And I think I carried that through. And when I found this group and you know, I admitted this to them and they accepted it, it was an I epiphany. That's the only thing I could think of to call it. And it was after, you know, from that moment on, yeah, I was sober. And you know, it's so emotional, even now, it was so powerful. Yeah, so that was the beginning. And but I still there was still something missing. Once I started getting sober and I didn't have a sponsor. The thing, nice thing too about the humanist meetings is they developed a 12 steps that didn't include God. We did have literature, AA literature, and that was just was secular. And I just that was the safe space. That's what I needed. But then I started, after a couple of years and things started seeping in and I started kind of changing a little bit. And I decided I'd start going to regular meetings. I was more tolerant and then I got a sponsor and I did the steps and the steps, I think I've said this before, and I can't for me, I don't think I can overstate the importance that the steps played in my personal development as a sober person, because it's basically just a self-help program, where you're forced to face things about your past, reconcile them, don't carry them with you, let them go, apologize, which was a huge thing for me, accept responsibility. All of those things. It was very important. And also, the weird thing is when I started getting sober, it was very emotional. It was a very emotional time, and my partner couldn't deal with it. And we ended up breaking up. And I just find it ironic that he dealt with all this shit he dealt with when I was a drunk. But once I got sober, we're dear friends to this day. We're going to Spain together in March. But I had to make amends to him and that, eventually. But yeah, so he ended up breaking up with me and that started a very difficult time in my sobriety. I got cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I was at a 20% chance of survival because I let it go for so long. Chemo, operations. But I stayed sober through all that. I relied on my the relationships that I developed in AA to help me. I went through bankruptcy, survived that. I was living in the basement of a rehab center, working for the owner of the company, who was an addict and a drunk and an abusive man. But I lived in the basement for 3 years. I'd wake up occasionally with a cockroach running across me. And I just did whatever I could. I was his personal assistant. I chauffeured him around, but I always had a goal in mind. And that's the gift of sobriety, is I could, it wasn't just living from one drunk to the next. It was living a sober life from one day to the next, and just putting one step in front of the, one foot in front of the other. I was still too screwed up to really keep a full-time job. Once I managed to, and then I started, I left that job. It was very abusive. It was like I was on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He was just an abusive man. And eventually I got out of that, and started cleaning apartments. And then from there, I got a full-time job in producing and managing for other commercial photographers, but I wasn't very good at it. I couldn't, I wasn't very good at it. My heart wasn't in it, and I was still kind of addled from all these years of drinking. So at the same time, at about the same time, so when I was going through cancer, I had an ex-boyfriend from Chicago who said, I want to send you these books and read them if you want to, you don't if you want, but so they ended up being books on Nichiren Buddhism, which is a particular kind of Buddhism. It's not Zen Buddhism. It's very different. That in conjunction with my sobriety, using the tools in sobriety, I've really been able to develop, I think, more of my potential as a human being, in sobriety, both spiritually, whatever that is. It's not religion. I don't. I'm. I. Yeah, I'm not a religious. I'm not religious at whatsoever. I'm skeptical of all institutions, especially religion. But those two things, I've really been able to develop a fuller life emotionally, spiritually. I still struggle a lot with my not a lot. I shouldn't say that. I don't struggle with it a lot, but there are still certain things that trigger me as far as these little things with anger. Now it seems to just be traffic when I have to drive. That's what triggers me now is traffic. If I see someone, my pet peeve is when people are driving and they've got their phone right here and they're driving. And you can tell if you're behind them because they don't stay in their lane or they slow down really slow. And in Chicago, to drive 20 in a 30 mile an hour really screws up traffic because it slows down everyone. But anyway, that's probably my biggest thing. I in sobriety, I slowly worked myself in back into commercial photography. It's a small world, even though New York is a big city. These separate industries are small, and you get a reputation one way or the other. And I couldn't go back to that world. So I slowly began just kind of developing another path to my commercial photography. And then I got a full-time job with this Danish company. And one of the conditions was that I start a branch. I get to move back to Chicago and start a branch in Chicago. Because by then I didn't need to be in New York anymore. I was done with New York. I love New York. It treated me well. I'm glad I got sober there. The energy there, it was fantastic. I'll stop talking here in a minute. And then COVID hit, and this Danish company pulled up stakes and left the US and left me and the sales rep not working. And I can remember that getting that letter and staying up all night because I was just, I got a mortgage now. I've got a car now. I don't have a job. What am I going to do? But thankfully, in sobriety, my practice, I've learned that, we're tested in to one degree or another every day. And problems arise, life sucks, get over it, move forward. So we started our own company, and now I'm doing well. We have this company, and then I do my own photography, commercial photography as an individual. We have like six or seven photographers in New York. We have a presence in Atlanta, here in Chicago. And then I do my own kind of commercial real estate, architecture, developer kind of stuff. I the other thing is I'm an introvert, and I've not in the time I've been in Chicago, I've not really been to too many meetings. I really haven't found any meetings that I can really feel comfortable with until this one. And yeah, and the Tasnua meetings, I mean, I absolutely love them. And I love all the different perspectives, and the honesty is fantastic here. So that's all I have to say. Sorry, I think I rambled on for quite a while. I hope everyone who wants to speak gets a chance to. Thank you very much.